I'm gonna ask you. I'm gonna ask you to talk about when you had your first drink.
I was probably around about 13 or 14 when I had my first drink, just around at friends' houses, you know, bottles of cider, bottles of wine, you know, things like that. Just doing whatever my mates were doing, really.
That sounds so common of teenagers. It's the wine, it's the cider, all those things. And so far, so teenage.
Yeah.
When did you realise that maybe you were drinking a little bit more than your friends did, or drinking differently to your friends?
It took me a long time to realise that. The way that things were was we used to hang around, we'd go to each other's houses, we'd drink a bit of wine, do a bit of this, that and the other. And then we started, as we got older, we started going out, 16, 17, 18, 19, clubbing, you know, out around the town. And at that time, Blackburn was a really busy town. There was lots of clubs open, there was lots of bars open. So everybody was sort of out drinking and partying. And I never really realised that I was any different to anybody else, any of my other friends that were drinking, because I never stopped to sort of consider it or to think about it. I know that with my drinking, I always drank to what we call blackout, where you can't really remember the next day. So I'd say to my friends, oh, you know, what happened with this? What happened with that? And they'd remember, but I would never remember. But I didn't have the common sense, really, to think that that was any different than what my friends were doing. I didn't put the two together. So it took me a long time for me to realise that my drinking was abnormal.
Talk to me about that. What led you down that path, and when did you conclude that, you know, I'm a bit different here to other people?
Like I said, it was the way it was with me was, you know, I could never really commit to anything. So in my eyes, I thought I was this like free spirit, this like kind of party animal, really, just interested in going out, having fun. You know, I did work. I worked in like hospitality at the time. And at that time, hospitality can be one of those industries where it's very easy to drink and very easy to use other things as well, because late nights, difficult hours, etc. So I think that my alcoholism was hidden a little bit by living and working in that sort of lifestyle, because I did a bit of like moving around the country, working in different areas. And a lot of people that I was working with also had drug and alcohol problems. So it was sort of hidden a little bit, I guess. And it wasn't until, I think I was probably about 24, 25, that it started getting out of hand, whereby I was drinking every day. I was craving alcohol in the morning. I was taking tablets to help me calm down so that I could get through the day at work. And it was when a friend sort of pointed out to me, like, I think you've got a bit of a problem with drinking and maybe you should try and cut down or stop. I remember trying to do that and I wasn't able to do it. So that was the first time that I realised that something wasn't quite right with my drinking.
I want to know what it's like when you get to that point and you physically try, you think, okay, I'm not going to drink. And then you realise you kind of have to.
A lot of denial for me. And I think it's like that for a lot of people that have a problem with drink. So I knew on a conscious level that there was a problem, in the sense that when I started drinking, I couldn't control the amount of alcohol that I took. So, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I might go into blackout, or I might just continue, or I might drink when I woke up. And I'd be in a lot of denial, and I would like make excuses for it, like, oh, well, I'm having a difficult time at work, or, you know, I've just split up with my boyfriend, or, you know, whatever it was, I'd make excuses. So there wasn't a realization for a long time. It took me a long time to come to terms with the fact that there was a problem that I could not solve on my own, if you will. So it was painful, really, because I remember feeling like I was on my own with it, because all the people around me seemed to be able to control the drinking. They seemed to be able to have a drink, go out of a, you know, have a night out, and they wouldn't wake up the next day and crave alcohol and act strangely or get into trouble when they were drinking. But I did. So I remember feeling like angry and jealous and not really understanding why my drinking was different to other people's. So I think that also kept me away from a solution for quite a long time.
So ultimately, all these emotions were swirling in your head. Ultimately, the excuses had to stop. What was the final straw for you? What was the catalyst that made you think, okay, I've really got to do something?
Yeah, well, I ended up losing my job because of drinking at work, and that still wasn't enough for me. And because I'd lost my job, I ended up drinking 24/7 then. So whereas before there was a little bit of control in the sense that I might drink after work or, you know, try and hang on during the day, it turned into 24-hour drinking then. And then what happened was, because I ran out of money, I became physically unwell and I had like a withdrawal seizure from alcohol. And that's when everybody became aware of the problem because I'd kept it so well hidden. A few friends had an inkling, but my family didn't know. And I've got a really loving, supportive family and they didn't know what was going on. So it wasn't until I had this seizure, ended up in hospital, that then my family became aware, which made me then have to do something about the problem. But I wasn't ready still to actually solve the problem or seek to solve the problem at that point.
When did you find out about Alcoholics Anonymous? When did you find out about AA?
Well, it wasn't that long after that incident with the seizure. So after that, there was quite a few incidents of hospital admissions, detoxes, trips to the doctors, you know, counsellors, drug and alcohol services, mental health services, a lot of like people involved really. But it wasn't really any of the professionals that led me to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was my mum saying to me, well, I think you might be an alcoholic and why don't we go to Alcoholics Anonymous? And I was very against the idea. I thought it was for like people that weren't like me because I was only sort of 20, probably 27 at this point. So I was still quite young. And still, like I said, in a lot of denial. So, it was my mum that took me to my very first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. But it was difficult for me to go because I wasn't 100% open to the idea that I was an alcoholic at that time.
Yeah. Let's walk you back then, the first time you set foot in the meeting room. What goes through your mind?
I was really frightened, to be honest. I didn't know what to expect because you sort of have this perception, or I had this perception of an alcoholic, which was somebody that was homeless, somebody that was living under a park bench, somebody that was, you know, dirty and bedraggled, and not somebody like me who was a, you know, young woman, had a roof over my head. So in my eyes, I didn't belong there. So I went along, like I said, and I think I was kind of encouraged to come along by my family because they didn't really know what else to do. And I didn't really know what else to do. And I went along with it. And when I walked in, I was really, really, really warmly welcomed. And that was the first surprise. And people sort of introduced themselves to me and they sat me down and got me a cup of tea. And it was obviously a room full of people, but not too many people. But they all just welcomed me and sat me down and said, look, you know, there's no pressure with you being here. Just sit and listen and see if you get something out of the meeting and see if you identify what we're going to say to you. So it was a wonderful welcome, but, you know, for a person that was struggling with an alcohol issue.
Some people have said to me, it's like finding a bunch of friends that they never knew that they had when they walk in. Is that a fair comment?
I would say that it is, but it did take me a few AA meetings before I got to that point because, like I said, the denial was quite strong with me and it took me a few times going to meetings before I got to that point where I resonated with the people there and thought to myself, actually, this is where I belong, this is where I need to be, and I want to be able to be like these people, free from alcohol. So I wouldn't say, if I'm being honest, it was like that the first time because it wasn't, because I was in denial about my illness. But as time's gone on, an AA meeting for me is like going home. It's where I feel the most comfortable and where I know that the people in there are not going to judge me They're always going to support me, and I can say whatever I want to them, and they'll always understand where I'm coming from.
Tell me when you had your last drink.
April the 17th, 2009.
Wow, so that's 11 years and change of sobriety. Yeah. I know you said one day at a time, that's one of the mantras that the AA use. So when you didn't drink that first day, did you ever imagine that, you know, you'd have 11 years under your belts at any time?
No. It was unimaginable for me, really, because at that time it was hard, and I needed sort of medication to help me get off the drink. And I was taught very early on by people in Alcoholics Anonymous that I needed to take it a day at a time, an hour at a time if I needed to. But every day that passes is another day sober. And I never really dreamed that I would get to this point where I feel completely free from that addiction and completely free from alcohol. No desire to want it, no desire for it to be in my life. No negative feelings towards it at all. So, yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing, really.
Your life at one point was, as you said, 24-hour drinking, needing a drink to cope with the world when you get up and everything. Tell us about your life now.
Wow. It's unrecognisable from the way that my life was. Like I said, you know, like you said, it's one day at a time, and those one days build up. And as those one days built up, my confidence built up. I came back to who I should have always been and who I wanted to be. I always wanted to do nursing qualification when I was younger, but because of my drinking, it got in the way. So in my sobriety, I went back into education, got the relevant qualifications so that I could go and do my nurse training, qualified to be a nurse. That's just like career side of things. I also fell in love, got married, had a young child, which I never thought I could do because of my drinking problem. I never thought I could be a mother. And not just that, it's the peace that I have today on a daily basis. I've got a solution to all my problems through working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I feel happy, just feel happy all the time. Whereas before, I felt anxious, scared, full of fear every day, physically ill every day. So it's hard to really compare the two. It feels like two different lives.
Two different people, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know if it's two different people. I just feel that other person, the one that was addicted to alcohol, it was like my spirit was crushed, really, and I feel that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me my spirit back and my lease for life, really.
Talk about a complete 180-degree turn. Listen, Sarah, I know you've picked a song for us. Do you want to tell us about that song and why you've chosen that one in particular?
I've chosen a song, and the lyrics of it remind me of it's Candice Staten, the Sourced, and it's called You've Got the Love. And when she's singing about the love, that's what I imagine Alcoholics Anonymous to be, and the higher power that I choose to call God to be as well. So that's why I picked this song.
Just my hands up in the air. I know I can count on you. Sometimes I feel like